This episode of The Stack was first broadcast on the 2nd of May 2015 on Monocle 24.
Words of praise for one of the finest newspaper supplements on the continent, flying up to Finland for a spring checkup on the print industry, and in London, one of our favourite editors is intentionally taking it slow, not only for this long weekend, but with publishing in general. From Milan to Helsinki via Marylebone, it's a leisurely May Day weekend edition of The Stack. Today on The Stack, we'll be getting a weekly fix of printed fodder with the editor of Delayed Gratification, and we'll be hearing how some of Finland's most read magazines are faring in the post-digital storm.
It's already challenging as we speak, but I'm waiting for that time when people actually continue reading and look for new ideas on papers and in books rather than online.
Plus, our David Pleasant has some nice things to say about Il Sole 24's handsome men supplement, Il.
Il is really everything a supplement should be, in my opinion. It's a bit radical, it's sort of removed from the main newspaper, and it's also really relaxed.
All that and plenty more coming up on this edition of The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis show. Hello and welcome to The Stack with me, Tyler Berlite. Now, to start the show, let's introduce our guest today. Rob Orchard is the co-founder and editorial director of The Slow Journalism Company, the publisher of Delayed Gratification magazine, which revisits the events of the preceding quarter and makes a virtue of being last to break the news. He spends his days writing and editing long-form features for the publication, which he describes as offering an antidote to PR-driven stories, knee-jerk reactions, and journalism. Well, hello, Rob, and welcome. I'm looking at a very handsome edition. I have to say, in sort of true Delayed fashion, I haven't seen your latest issue, which came out in March and has this very handsome vertical. Is it a belly band?
Or it's a belly band. It's a vertical belly band.
It's like a shoulder to foot band or something like that. a very good looking issue, which I would imagine that right now you are probably in the thick of it, I guess, getting your summer issue out, I would imagine.
We are. So our summer issue, which covers January, February, March of this year, and it's going to be out in June. So we're working on our way on that. Lots of good stuff going into that. Some really exciting features. An extraordinary quarter for news. The Charlie Hebdo attacks.
Another bad quarter for aviation.
Yes. Yes, a lot of major stories. Some nice, funny, light ones as well.
Of course.
We're working on, I think, one of our most interesting infographics so far. Are you a fan of House of Cards?
Yes, I am. But I have to say, maybe it's been the sunny weather this spring. I got into it in the beginning. And I'm not finished with the current series, but it's bringing me down slightly. I haven't been sort of, you know, rushing to. So I think I've got maybe three more to go, but tell me.
It's an infographic. It's right. About the House of Cards series. It's comparing the evilness, the respective evilness of the two main protagonists in the US and the UK versions. So we have Frances Underwood and we have Frances Urquhart in the UK version. So we have a team of people watching every single episode, noting down every evil thing that both of them do throughout the series, so we can work out, because obviously there were more episodes in the US, we can work out an evil per episode infographic, broken down by moral breakdown, by a financial lack of probity, by sexual misconduct, by outright criminality. But we have this problem with it, which is not wanting to put spoilers in, because, you know, there are people like you who have three to go, and if they open up DG and there's things saying how it ends, they're going to be very cheesed off. So what we're doing is we're putting it all through the filter of the Catholic ideas of mortal and venial sins. So we can add up a quantifiable and objective amount of evil per episode without anybody knowing who does what when.
I thought you were going to have to say you had another print innovation, which is going to be maybe like an advent calendar that you could sort of peel back things. If you don't want to look, then you're...
Wow.
What do you think of that?
I think it sounds expensive.
Yeah, it is.
I think it sounds brilliant, but expensive, yeah.
Considerably more than the belly band. Tell me, do you think about your summer issue a little bit differently, just knowing that people are probably consuming their print in a slightly different way at that time of year? So does that mean there's 5 or 6% more of the light towards the back of the book?
Well, do you know what? I think that's an ongoing trend for us anyway, because we have this problem when we sit down as a group of editors and we look at the flat plan and as it's coming together, we often have this problem of it just being incredibly bleak, because actually a lot of the significant stories, the ones that you want to go back to, are the ones that are just desperately sort of soul-wrenchingly bleak. So we are trying to increase the levity factor as well in it, have lots of nice funnies in there, and some nice, slow, long reads that actually won't leave you needing a hug at the end of them.
Right. It's difficult. I think it's, you know, goes for so many titles, because then you also, you know, you don't want to, you know, tip that balance as well as to why people come to you in the first place, though.
Yes, absolutely. You have to cover all of the key elements. Absolutely, you do. But quite often, actually, even in some of the bleakest and grimmest stories, there's actually a personal triumph, a personal journey that can resonate and that you can build a story around. So we have a fascinating story about Iraq, and about the Marsh Arabs in Iraq, and about Saddam Hussein's horrible campaign to drain the marshes and the mass exodus and so on, but then also about this one man's massive effort and personal journey to reflood the marsh areas and rebuild the culture there. So it's an amazing personal story, but which also kind of touches on the broader, wider history of Iraq over the last 20 years.
Which is, you know, which is also a fantastic adjacency. I just want to go back to Infographics, though.
Yes.
Is that a collaborative effort? Because, you know, people who know the magazine, you know, what you do is so standout, and or is that sort of commissioning sort of one person saying get on with it, or is this many bottles of wine and a nice beer opened up and a whiteboard plotting it? Don't give it all away, but I think everyone would be intrigued how it works.
Well, we are very blessed with our art director Christian, who's the single best designer that I've worked with and who thinks about infographics in a very interesting way. So he actually trained as an architect part-time, I think just to do something to keep his big brain ticking over. So he has a really interesting sort of 3D way of thinking about infographics. And we do, I would say probably for every single one that you see included in there, we throw away 9 ideas and we go a long way down the path. So, for example, in the latest issue, there's a tiny infographic in there. It looks like it took about 10 minutes. Well, it actually took a week. We did this infographic where we pulled together all of the information to work out what you would need to do in order to win a Knight Grand Cross or a Dame Grand Cross, so the highest order and the order of the British Empire. And so we compiled a list of everybody who'd been awarded one in the time of Queen Elizabeth, where they went to school, where they went to university, what their parents did, whether they had letters after their name before they were awarded, the area that they worked in, whether they did any military service and so on. We pulled it all together so that we could do a big analysis of exactly what you would need to do. And we looked at it and we said, it's not actually very interesting. So all of that, a week's worth of labour and thought and effort and trying to find, you know, biographies of obscure people, was boiled down to the single fact that in that period, 7 women have received this highest order, and 9 people called John have received that. And that was what it boiled down to. Yeah.
After 7 days on the trot.
Exactly.
You've brought a number of titles. We're going to get to them. We're going to go away for a short break. We're going to go to Helsinki after that. But then we'll be looking at the titles you've got today. You're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24. My guest today, Rob Orchard. We're back in a moment.
There's a brand new show on Monocle 24, The Big Interview. Our bold new series featuring in-depth interviews with inspirational names in global politics, business, culture and design. Hosted by our senior editors, it brings you unique one-on-one discussions with fascinating characters as we find out what makes them tick. Tune in every Sunday at 9 a.m. London time to hear Monocle's insights into some of the sharpest minds shaping our world today. This week, Monocle editor Andrew Tuck meets Pulitzer Prize-winning photographer Lindsay Addario.
In those moments when I am looking death in the eye, I ask myself repeatedly, why can I not turn away from the story? And I just kept going back to Iraq, to Afghanistan, at the expense of my life.
That's The Big Interview with Lindsay Addario this Sunday, right here on Monocle 24.
You're listening to The Stack with me, Tyler Brulé, here on Monocle 24. Now, regular listeners of The Stack will be well aware of the resurgence of the printed page as increasing numbers of people decide to make their own magazines. Some say you're now witnessing a new golden age of periodicals, but many publishers around the world face numerous challenges. Finland is no exception. Last month, as part of the IHME Helsinki Contemporary Art Festival, a debate looked at the survival methods of some of the country's best-known magazine titles. Our correspondent Mark Bosworth was there and sent us this report.
The editors of 6 art and culture magazines discussed the digitization of information, but also what's being called Finland's print media crisis, which has been brought on by the economic situation. Over the last year, a number of magazines have stopped printing, and the country's largest newspaper, Helsingin Sanomat, has announced redundancies. Heikki Valkama is the editor of Image, a monthly culture and politics magazine with 80,000 readers. He puts the crisis down to digitization.
Last evening, I didn't read any books, or I didn't read even digital articles or magazines. I watched Netflix, House of Cards. And that's what's happening. People are using Facebook, Twitter, watching movies online, watching TV online. It's the same time you have to spend, and you're spending it to something else than magazines.
Does the nice tactile object of a well-made magazine not have a place in people's homes anymore?
I would say it does. When you have the quality magazine there, it's kind of luxury. Newspapers you throw away every day, but magazines you keep for a month or two or a year. So there is a difference between print and print, I mean newspaper and magazine. And that's why you really have to keep the quality. The reader have to feel that the magazine is something special. In the future, even print magazine can't only be a print magazine. The brand extensions are really important.
Mutta se, että kun mä aikaisemmin sanoin siitä, että me maksetaan kilpailukykyistä kritiikkipalkkiota meidän kriitikoille, niin me tehdään se nimenomaan...
FAT is an annual magazine about Finland's contemporary art scene. Its founder, Laura Kerniker, who recently left to concentrate on her work as an art curator, says FAT went to the Finnish government for help.
FAT is a great example of doing something totally differently, because we've been funded by grants ever since we started. I mean, the way we started was that we got the grant and then we began to actually make the magazine. So I think people are trying to find different solutions, how they are funding their projects.
Would FAT magazine have ever happened if it didn't get a grant?
I don't think so. It was a necessary thing. It's more like an artwork. It's more like art piece itself. I don't think it can endlessly be supported only by grants. I think that the system has to change. But still, like when you start something new, you have to test out like how is it going to work? What's the scene here in Finland? Like who want to support it? Who are the readers? Who are the international readers? How do we get through to the international magazine medias and all this? So there's a lot of things still to do after these two issues. I don't know how we could have funded without the grant.
My name is Teemu Fiilin, and I work for Rumba magazine. I'm the editor-in-chief. The magazine comes out 5 times a year, and it focuses on new music and phenomenon in new music.
Rumba has been going since 1983. Like other magazines, it's seen a drop in readership. It currently has 50,000 readers for the monthly print title, while its online offering gets the same amount of readers per week. Teemu Fiilin says Rumba decided to make a major change to the magazine's output.
Last year, the magazine came out 10 times, and this year it comes out 5 times. So it's obvious that there's a big change in that. But I have to stress that I was one of the people who was deciding that less issues is better for the magazine.
Why?
Because now we have about 2 months per issue to think about what we want to do. We want people to be able to save their copies and maybe take them from their bookshelf like in 5 years' time and still find something that is a bit more timeless than, for example, the things that we write about on the online version. We want to make a quality magazine and we want to spend time making it.
Heikki vastaa ja sitten Antti.
Totta kai me maksetaan palkkioita ja sen takia täällä oli sellaisia, että me pyritään luomaan ympäristöä.
Today's discussion has highlighted various methods of survival for print magazines, from creating a brand, relying on government grants, and opting for a less is more approach, as they all try to find their way in an increasingly digitized environment. But despite the challenges, Laura Kerniker remains optimistic for print.
It's going to be challenging. It's already challenging as we speak, but still, I think I'm waiting for that time when people actually continue reading and look for new ideas on papers and in books rather than online. And I think it's happening soon. I don't know when, but hopefully sooner the better.
For Monocle in Helsinki, I'm Mark Bosworth.
And you're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Brulé. I'm joined today by Rob Orchard, founder and editor of Delayed Gratification. I think at the top of the show, we talked enough about current issue and what's coming up. It's a long weekend in many parts of Europe. I think most of Europe, in fact. I think it's a long weekend also in Hong Kong and a couple of other places. What should people be reading this weekend? What have you brought as your picks for the weekend?
I've got a series of fantastic magazines. Have you seen Feelings magazine?
I've not seen Feelings magazine. And this is the only sort of reflection when you're talking about, you know, people needing a hug if you have a particularly bleak issue. Tell us about Feelings magazine.
Feelings magazine is wonderful. I think so. There are only about 70 words in the entire magazine, and they're on the back. And there's effectively just the contents page on the back. And it just introduces you to 6 photo essays. So the rest of the magazine is just a series of very quirky photo essays, this time based around the theme of cars. Mm. And I love it because here we all are tying ourselves in knots, commissioning people, you know, editing, sub-editing, going back and forth, improving. And here's somebody who's written 70 words on the back of a magazine and put together something that actually made me laugh about 5 or 6 times as I was going through.
It's a delightful cover.
Yes.
no cover lines whatsoever. Just they've got a nice sticker. Feelings number one. Cars includes free double-sided poster. And here we have the rear view of a, I don't know, was it early 90s? Not a particularly handsome Renault. Yep. Very, very dusty window with a happy face just drawn on the back with, I would imagine, a finger. And then a sad face just above the windshield wiper. Brilliant, brilliant cover.
It's great, isn't it? I mean, it's one of those things I love from magazines where you can see it's very much one person's personal quirk and interest in the world. So there's a lovely feature in there where they've just done a series of photo shoots of cars that are cut and shut. So they have multiple different colours on the metalwork, and they've been kind of clamped together from different bits of cars. They have a fascinating feature about a thing called Fordite. And Fordite is a new material that has been excavated from the factory floors of Ford factories. And what it is, it's the place where they spray paint the cars. So actually, when you chip away at it and you look at it in cross-section, it's this extraordinary kaleidoscope of dried paint going back and forth. And people are now apparently making that into kind of beautiful sculptures and so on.
I really like the story on decals as well.
Yes.
Whatever happened to decals on cars?
What happened to decals?
I'm sure that they exist in certain suburbs, things like that. There's a Panda 750. I didn't have the edition called Fire, which I didn't even know existed, but and then there's just this great sort of palm tree sort of item. This must be a club called Estival. And yeah, really, really fantastic work. Definitely one not to throw out.
Exactly. I don't think it's going to fill up a huge amount of your long
weekend.
No. But, you know, over a nice coffee to start you off.
Absolutely.
Before you move on to this magazine, Jacobin magazine. So this is a left-wing magazine from the States.
And appropriate for May Day weekend, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Like
yeah.
the theme?
Yep. And I like it. It's not super over-designed. It's relatively straightforward. It's got a lot of nice pieces in there. So I was just reading a piece about Salvador Allende in Chile and how he commissioned one of the first government computing systems and how he managed to break an anti-government strike using it. And there's some fascinating stuff in there about the privatization of space and what might be coming in the future. So, you know, in one of their adverts, they say, you give us $50, we promise the Bolshevization of America. I'm not sure they're going to go that far. They've got lots and lots of nice ideas, and it's all through the prism of this idea of what might the future look like, what might technologies look like if they were turned to the cause of equality rather than profit. It's very niche, but it's fascinating.
Yeah, and it's a... The smartphones society feature, you know, just as the mobile defined the 20th century, the smartphone is reshaping how we live and work today. That's fine. But they've got a nice infographic just looking at how Americans use their phones. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 81% are sending text messages, you know, 50% are downloading apps, 8% are, you know, using it to check in, 21% video chat. And I love this. Another great infographic about there's just an app for that,
yep.
which is beautifully done. And I just looked on the massive done out of Brooklyn. Very, very nice.
Yeah.
Maybe just time quickly for one more, and then we'll just
absolutely
we'll shuffle
fantastic.
Off for a break.
Well, I think this is another real hit. So this
I'm
is,
so glad you brought
you know
the hour
magazine?
In. I picked up the hour in Zurich Airport, appropriately enough, during the Basel Watch Fair when it had its kickoff.
Yep.
And what a wonderful project.
I like this magazine particularly because I don't care about watches. Not really. I've got a nice watch, but it's not particularly expensive and I wouldn't want to spend lots of money on a watch. And this is obviously geared in large part, towards people who would and who care about it. But yet, at the same time, I find a huge amount in here. And
there is a porn component as well. You may never own a watch, but you are completely immersed in this world. What's nice is they've moved away from it being being a glossy exercise. We always sort of, especially if, you know, there's many, many magazines, certainly out of Asia right now, that are, of course, you know, very big on covering timepieces, particularly out of Japan, but they're all incredibly sort of glossy.
Yeah.
And this really goes the other direction.
It's great. Well, so what they've done is they've used one thing, which is the watch, as a jumping off point for talking about lots of other things. There was a great thing in their opening letter. They said, the information age divides our attention into ever finer slices, eating up the time we have. Perhaps this explains people's fascination with watches, barely of utility in a world of ubiquitous cell phones. That sweeping hand is a non-stop little reminder of the need to grasp as much as we can of all there is to see, hear, taste, feel, and explore while we can. I just really like that. And this, you know, the cover interview with this professor who apparently had coined the phrase viral marketing and various other things, and has written this fascinating sounding book about how we are all being consumed by our need to keep up with digital technology, sort of, you know, chimed with me. But also, you know, lots and lots of nice and interesting and in-depth pieces there, plus some good stuff about watches.
Yeah, not to mention, and they've given them, I think from a business point of view, just before we go to break, is they've given themselves enough elbow room as well that, it, you know, if this runs out of steam, but they create enough of a franchise, you know, this can be general interest. I mean that in the nicest possible way. You know, it could still have a focus, but it definitely gives them room to grow. Rob, we're going to go away for a short break. When we come back, a new little segment that we're adding to the mix. It's called In Praise Of, and we've certainly kept our David Pleasant busy with that. So have a listen right after this.
Culture with me, Robert Bound, at half an hour is now shorter, sweeter, new and improved. Where else can you end up informed and entertained after half an hour? By watching a quarter of Oscar-winning The Theory of Everything, by reading the first 20 pages of Kazuo Ishiguro's new novel, by speed-walking through a thousandth of the Venice Biennale, not on your Nelly. Culture with Robert Bound, smaller and even more perfectly formed.
This is what people do for a living, right? They put their shows on. This is the show of shows.
Culture premieres at 1900 hours London time on Mondays.
You're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Brulé, and my special guest, Rob Orchard. We'll be returning to our print review in a moment, but we thought we should mark a shift in the season. And today we launch a new series dubbed In Praise Of. Every week, a different Monocle editor or correspondent or contributor will tell us why they love a certain periodical. This week, we start in Milan with Il, the elegantly masculine magazine supplement of the Italian financial daily Il Sole 24. Often fought over when it lands in her office, here's why Signor Pleasant likes it so much.
I have always known the newspaper Il Sole 24. It's an iconic title. I think my father read it. It's classic kind of pink pages, a really familiar part of Italian life. But the supplement, Il, is something a bit more recent, and I came across it perhaps 5 years ago, mainly thanks to its really striking design and covers. There are some good supplements in the Italian market with the other newspapers. Corriere della Sera has several very good supplements and so on. But it really stands alone, Il, for its content and its tone. Lately, it has pitched itself to a kind of younger, more clued up, smarter, sort of more international, more urbane audience. So somewhere sort of between the old guard that reads the newspaper and the very young, fresh generation that might read the supplement. Il's covers are always really distinctive. They're perhaps distinctive for their sort of subtlety. They're not really shouty covers. They'll often have long quotes actually on the covers. So it's sort of like making you work out the cover. That's partly because I guess it's a supplement, so they can afford not to shout because they know that everyone's going to pick up their magazine. They don't have to compete on the newsstand like other covers. There's not so much of a structure to the magazine. It's not very rigid. There's something quite loose and relaxed about Il. They do have a quite recently titled regular feature or section called YOLO. And I just love that Il Sole 24 has such a serious tone as the sort of Financial Times of Italy. So it just sort of makes me chuckle that its supplement has this big section called YOLO, You Only Live Once, the acronym used by teenagers across the world. And it really sets about trying to kind of break boundaries with what sort of things that you might like to read and find out about. A really kind of eclectic mix of adventure stories. There's some short fiction in there. There's some very informative news-based, current affairs-based articles as well. But it's always a mixed bag, and I just love that title. Il is really everything a supplement should be, in my opinion. It's kind of a bit radical. It's sort of removed from the main newspaper, and it's also really relaxed. Classically, I think it's one of those supplements that you take out of the newspaper and perhaps kind of forget about the newspaper itself. I think a lot of people might buy Il Sole 24, especially for Il.
Our David Pleasant there with words of praise for Il, the weekend supplement of Il Sole 24 newspaper out of Italy. You're listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24. We continue our magazine review with Rob Orchard after this. Almost time to go, and I can see, Rob, you've got Riposte magazine there.
Riposte magazine, what a fantastic magazine. A smart magazine for women. I've got issue number 3 in front of me. I don't think it's necessary just for women, because actually I found a huge amount to read in here. A couple of real highlights for me. They did this beautiful, quirky, completely sort of out of context, but lovely photo essay that they put in a separate booklet in there, and it's photos of people in offices in the 1980s, and it's truly wonderful. You know, they've pulled together this extraordinary collection of people working at desks and partying after making a big sale and so on, and put it with little extracts from motivational business magazines from the 80s. I love it. Absolutely fantastic. I don't particularly know why it's in there. I think it's in there because the editor, Danielle, has just got a really quirky, interesting, engaging, curious mind and has brought it in there. So there's more mainstream things as well. There's great interviews with sort of inspiring women. There's a fantastic one with the lady who is National Geographic's explorer in chief and goes off around the place and has this major mission to save the oceans and so on. But yeah, a lovely, lovely blend of different things. There was one other feature in there that really got me, where they interviewed a load of teenagers about how they use social media. And as somebody who doesn't really understand or appreciate social media all that much, I just found it fascinating. They're mentioning social media things in there that I have never heard of, but also that they were very, very strategic about how they, you know, how they use different things for different parts of their lives, building up different profiles of themselves, being very strategic about how they use this stuff. Whereas I just see it as this big white noise surrounding me that I find overwhelming.
That makes two of us. I had a foreign correspondent from one of the major news channels, who was also sort of very excited because he's left and he's building up his own brand. He was talking about this thing called, he goes, you need to be on Periscope. And I was like, well, I'm not on anything. And then he started showing me how brilliant Periscope was, because it was connecting you to the news. And so it was like, okay, show us. And there was this, on his screen, it was just like lots of people. And the whole point is, I guess, that it's about its liveness. And, there's three people watching someone basically live in their bedroom. And then there was someone, a cow getting, not pulled out of a swimming pool, but a cow getting pulled out of, a hedge in Los Angeles. And I thought, okay, exactly why I don't need to know about Periscope.
Exactly right.
Rob Orchard, always good to see you. So June, we can look for the next delayed gratification.
June, the next delayed gratification is coming out. And then also look forward to the end of the year when we are turning 5. And I think we're going to do lots of big things to celebrate and hopefully bring our subscribers along as well.
Excellent. Well, we look forward to that. Sounds like an event.
I think it will be, yes.
That brings us to the end of this 140th edition of The Stack with me, Tyler Berlay. Again, thanks to our guest, Rob Orchard, our producer today, David Pleasant, and our studio manager, almost as ever, Claire Urban. If you have any comments or queries, drop us a note at info@monocle.com. Remember, we're back next Saturday at the very same time, of course. You can always listen again at monocle.com or via iTunes. But for now, for me, have a very good long weekend. Goodbye.